The most insightful and thought-provoking show on radio. Real, unrehearsed, and impactful interviews that encourage critical thinking for finding solutions for life's experiences. Our goal is to help others be more, do more, and have more. This is the Abundant Solutions Hour with your host, Gregory Turner.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Abundant Solutions Hour. We are so excited to have you with us tonight. Tonight's show is a wonderful and exciting show. We have two great guests with us tonight. One is a best-selling author, and the other one is the husband of the best-selling author. Tonight's show is life and death is the topic of tonight's show. And if you are married, if you are dating, please have your notes and pads and everything available, because this is going to be an exciting show. Our guest tonight, best-selling author, is Ty Thomas. She's the author of Interruption in Time, A Chronicle of Life and Death. And this, what you're here tonight, is volume one. And Ty is the chief executive officer and lead caregiver and self-care consultant of Seven Ways of Thinking. And also on the line is her husband, Vincent Thomas. He's the company director and caregiver, consultant of Seven Ways of Thinking, LLC. Again, if you have some notes or whatever paper, please have that close by, because tonight we're going to learn a lot. And if you're in a relationship or married, how well do you know the person that you're with? Are you willing, or do you really understand the vows that you both gave, that when you were married, that you would stay together through whatever, anything that comes, any storm that comes? Are you really serious about your vows? Ty and Vincent, are you there? Ty and Vincent, are you there?
Yes.
Hey, I'm great.
Hey, I'm fine. Can you guys hear me?
Yes.
Okay, good. Welcome to the Abundant Solutions Hour. We have a great show. And I'm so glad to have you guys on, because I know you guys could have been busy doing a lot of things, but you wanted to tell your story about what you do. And first, you know, I want to talk to you guys about some of the things that you're out there doing. And I want you to talk about Seven Ways of Thinking, Ty.
Okay. Well, I started Seven Ways of Thinking by accident, honestly. I've been in the caregiving field for over 15 years, and as I kept consulting people, I started noticing a pattern where the patient caregiver, the patient and spouse were running into difficulties handling little issues that would come along, and it would wind up blowing up into bigger issues. And what I found was that there were underlying issues that happened before they became a caregiver or before the patient became a patient. So, and I noticed that there wasn't a tool out there or tools to help them solve these small issues that now became bigger issues. And because I had been a caregiver and with my husband, who was a patient, I felt like I understood where they were coming from, so to speak. And that's it. Seven Ways of Thinking just started out of that, out of just the necessity of helping other patients and caregivers to understand and try to work with them and realize that these shifting dynamics are constantly intermingling, but when you have issues that blow up, it's usually before it happened, before this health crisis happened, and just giving them the tools to help weed all those underlying issues out so they can better have a better relationship. Because if the patient doesn't have a healthy spirit or the caregiver doesn't have a healthy spirit, nobody becomes healthy, and it's just a continuous, almost destructive cycle.
And yes,
that's how
you
started it.
Oh, that's so awesome. And it's a service to help others is what it is. And it's through your experiences how this company was started. Am I correct?
Yes. Yes, it was. Yeah. Yes, it was. And my husband was. Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
It actually started before Vince had a health crisis. It really started when my father was diagnosed with PLS, which is primary lateral sclerosis. And my mother was not so much taking care of him, but I just saw that the relationship that they had when my father became conflicted with this condition, it was a neuromuscular condition, He continued to work. He continued to get up at 3 in the morning. He continued to build because he was a master carpenter. He didn't let anything slow him down. But just watching that relationship develop and grow, my father and mother didn't let any obstacles stand in the way. So I had an early experience watching my mother care for my father, even though he wasn't dependent on her. And then, ironically, my husband wound up becoming ill in 1999, mm-hmm. and I was put into that position suddenly. But because I had that foundation and because it was innate in me, it didn't bother me. But that's because of all those experiences, I was able to form more of a broad opinion without any judgment as to why caregivers get so stressed out or patients feel the guilt. And Vince can talk to you more about that from the patient side, but that's the direction that I had, was from all those experiences of seeing it and dealing with it firsthand.
And yes, and what, you know, Ty, for all those that are just listening in, we have Ty and Vincent Thomas on with us tonight, and we're talking about, let's talk about your book, An Interruption in Time, A Chronicle of Life and Death, and this is your first volume. What happened to Vincent? I know you said he became ill at some point, and then you had to take care of him, and you're talking about caregiving.
Yes.
What happened to Vincent?
Well, in middle of December, we had company on our son's birthday, his 44th birthday. I came back from the grocery store because we had sudden company from his grandfather and his aunt and his niece. I came back and I saw the fire trucks and the police and ambulance outside of my apartment building, and found out that Vince could not stand. He fell. He could not feel his legs. He had received an inoculation, a vaccination, and we didn't realize that that may have been the cause of it. But within a 36-hour time period of him falling and him being admitted to the hospital through the ER and then the ICU, he was 4-point paralyzed. He was completely paralyzed from the neck down. And this was a sudden health event that happened to us. And from there on, it was just, for a month and a half, it was very, very bad. He died once. He almost died again. And thank God that he doesn't remember a month and a half of that. But it was a time that really, I don't say it tested my strength, because I felt like it was something that I just had to do. It was just every time that there was an issue that came up, it had to be solved so that Vince can heal happily as far as internally in his mind. And that's how I dealt with it for 7.5 months, because he was in the hospital for 7.5 months.
Oh, wow. Were you guys newlyweds at the time of this, when this happened to Vincent?
No, we were married the prior year, September 6th of 1999. We were about a year and a couple months just married out. But I can say that Vincent and I were together before that, since 1993. So we had developed a very strong relationship prior to that. And that's, I believe, because when Vince became paralyzed, he couldn't talk. He was completely out of it. So I was more like his voice, his advocate, his supporter. I call it his spirit whisperer, because I had to keep his spirit in line. But I really grabbed all of those titles because I knew who Vince was before he went into the hospital. You know, he knew who I was before he went to the hospital. So I had to grab his personality, his characteristics that I knew of him prior to this, and that's how I was able to be full throttle with him as far as caring for him, even though there was doctors and nurses there, thank God. But
yeah.
I had to be 110% caring for him.
To be that young, I know you guys were young, and you were just starting out as married, husband and wife,
mm-hmm.
and,
mm-hmm.
you know, I know you guys both took vows. I mean, you were really tested. Your marriage was really, really tested. Being that young and being able to take care of your husband. And I know a lot of people may say, well, that's what she's supposed to do. But you have a lot of people that can't do that. They don't know how to do that. And and I'm saying that, and I just want to know where – I know you had a strong foundation because of your family. That's something that's in the very beginning of your book. And I want to read a quote. that you have in there is just stuck with me when I read it. My life is not what has happened to me, but what I choose to become.
Yes.
And under that, you have listed that you're a wife, mother, daughter, and friend.
Yes.
Strength. Where did your strength come from to take care of your husband? And I don't think people realize how sick Vincent was.
Right. I can all praise is due to my parents. I honestly, my mother used to say that when Vince was in the hospital, her and I did talk a lot. Her and I and my father and I talked a lot. She did tell me one time when I was really sad and depressed, out of the hospital, because I never went in the hospital and showed him that. But she did tell me, she reminded me of what I brought into the relationship with my husband. And that was my strength, my humility. And that all praises to them, because that's where I received it from. But I have to honestly say, Greg, that I was innately born like that as well, and with the experiences I've had. So I don't know if I know that marriage and the vows, you know, have a big thing to do with it, but I really never looked at that, taking care of Vince. I just did what I had to do, and because of all the three things that was tied into me, which was being born like that, having that innate humility and caring for somebody, watching my parents and how humble they were and giving to my entire family as far as just mentally and support, and then the experiences I've had, that allowed me to take care of Vince. And yes, we were married, and yes, you can look at the in sickness and in health, to death do us part. Yes, you can look at that, and that is true. But I can honestly say that it because of who Vince was before that, that tied in into what happened after that, if that makes any sense. I knew his character before that. Yeah, and he knew my character before that, so I guess it just kind of just easily just transitioned. I really can't explain it, but it was, I just knew who he was before that, and he wasn't some type of evil person, and I wasn't angry at him. You know, we never stayed angry for more than, you know, we wouldn't go to bed angry, so to speak. So it was just all those different dynamics that we had before he went to the hospital that helped me take care of him easier, or was willing to take care of him easier.
Yes, and Vincent, he is on the phone. I know I haven't asked him a question yet, but Vincent, you know, the day that your illness happened, I've known you to be always a big guy, a muscular guy, heavy, you know, strong guy. What happened that day? I know something happened. What do you remember that day?
Yeah, what happened was, like I say, it was my son's birthday. We were getting ready to celebrate. My grandfather and my aunt came over, and I was sitting in the living room. I went to stand up, and I felt my legs moving, but they weren't literally moving like in my mind I thought they were. And then I just fell straight over and hit the ground. So, you know, prior to that, I had taken like muscle relaxers or something to that effect, and so I thought maybe I had taken too many or something to that effect. So I kind of crawled in the living room. My aunt was saying, you know, what's wrong? What's wrong? You know, and I said, I think I took too many muscle relaxers. So, you know, she called the ambulance. I was just in the room laying across the bed like I was on my knees praying. And then next thing I know, ambulance and, you know, paramedics and everybody was coming in the room. And once I kind of got on the gurney and went downstairs and got in the ambulance, I made it to the hospital, and I don't remember too much at that point, but I believe it was the next day when they kind of diagnosed maybe what was happening with me. And, you know, my wife whispered in my ear. She said, Vince, you know, she explained to me what was going to happen, and, you know, and I would come through it and everything would be all right. And literally, when she said that, I literally don't remember anything after that, maybe like a month and a half later.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, Greg, I forgot to tell you that he was hit with Guillain-Barré syndrome. That was the condition that he was hit with, which basically destroys the nerves and the myelin sheath that protects the nerves and the axons, which all goes directly to the brain. So it just everything just broke down inside his body. It's almost like his body just destroyed itself internally through the nerves.
Yes. And, Ty, you know, I want to say, and I want to ask you about the atmosphere that you created in that hospital room for Vincent. You know, life and death is truly in, it truly is in the tongue, you know.
Yes.
And for you to tell Vincent that and for you to be protected of him in that room, what kind of atmosphere did you create for Vincent? And I think this is very, very important for anyone dealing with anyone, dealing with any type of sickness or in the hospital or whatever. What type of atmosphere did you create for Vincent?
Well, this is where the spirit whisper comes in, because I, like I said, because of how I knew our relationship was, we always had each other's back, and we always we never went to bed angry. So I wanted to, I knew that when I was told what Vince was what Vince had, and then I went home and researched it, I knew, or possibly I just felt like I knew what was going to happen to him, and sure enough, it did. So my first thought was, okay, we have to leave him here. He's away from his family. He's away from his son, who he's very close with, and he's away from me and his extended family. So I made the decision to keep Vince's spirit happy. So I had to keep telling him that it's going to be fine. And because he knew who I was, characteristically wise, he knew that I wasn't playing. He knew that I was sincere. So I had to keep his spirit happy. That had to go with his family, with his friends, anybody that visited him. You couldn't go into the room crying. I know it was very difficult for people to, you know, to refrain from that, but they had to get their emotions out. And if it came out in the room, I asked them to leave, or the person I was going in with them to escort them, because I couldn't allow Vince to feel sad, because he's such a family person. He would be more concerned as to why you're crying rather than them crying for him, because he didn't know how serious he was, because like Vince said, he didn't know anything for a month and a half, but that's the direction that I took. He had to be spiritually happy because he was not coming home. He had become paralyzed so quickly, and just the trajectory of what was happening or what was going to happen, I decided to solve the solution, solve the problem before the problem existed. And that's, I just had to keep his spirit happy, and I constantly talked to him and just let him know everything was happening. I constantly told him everything that was happening with Justin, all the good things, even though every time I talked to him, he was aware at that moment. But it's amazing how the brain, I feel, shuts down when other parts of your body is healing. But I just made sure that he knew that he was happy and that everything would be okay. I asked his family members to do the same, and it just to keep him cocooned with a positive aura around him. So when we left, he wouldn't be sad on purpose or projected sadness on him. So that's what I decided to do very early on. Yes.
Yes. Did you ever ask the question, and did you look back over your life and just say, you know, why is this happening to us? Did you ever question it?
Yes, I did. Yes, I did. And I would get up in the middle, in the middle of the night when I came from the hospital, or I was sitting on the side of bed, and I would ask. I was like, This, what the hell is going on? Like, this is not what we're supposed to be. But the times that I did that, you know, I cried, but then I had to get myself out of that quickly, because I had to get my son up, and Vince and I made a choice when Vince first went to the hospital that we wouldn't project any sadness onto our son. We knew that would be damaging, and we could not allow that to happen with Justin. So the times that I was very distraught, I did it in my room. I was very purposeful where I did it. And then, you know, my mom was there, so she would talk to me. But, yes, there were times when I asked why, but it did not last long, because I had to snap out of it and make sure my son was happy, and I'd take him to daycare. And before I even went to the hospital, if I had to go straight to the hospital, I let myself go through all those negative, sad, depressing feelings before I left the house.
Yes. You know, and my father, too, was ill. And I remember my dad telling me that he hated the fact that he was putting a burden on his family. And my question to you, Vince, did you feel like you were a burden to your family when you were able to, you know, recognize it and see everything that was going on around you? Did you ever want to just give up? Did you ever feel like, you know, my wife is doing so much, I can't move, I've lost so much weight, I'm going through all of this medical care, I'm tired, I just want to give up.
I never really felt like that. The only thing I'm going to be honest, Greg, I remember one sad day. All the other days when I would hear my wife, you know, she have heels on. So when I hear it, I hear click, 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 and I don't even see her come around the corner yet. And she walk around the corner and I see her smiling, I'm smiling. I don't remember any of that in a hospital. It was only one day. And the only thing I wanted to do, I just wanted to go home, lay in my bed next to my wife, and see my son in the room. That's all I wanted. I just wanted to go. I didn't care how bad I was off. I just wanted to have the satisfaction of laying in my bed and being with my family because I had been so disconnected for so long. It didn't matter whether I couldn't necessarily move, but the fact that I was surrounded with my family, and that's the only thing that I really, really, that really just got me.
Yeah. The first chapter of the book, Ty, you labeled it as us.
Yes.
Us.
Yes.
What, when you start writing this book, I know you struggled with it at first to get started, and now that you start writing this book, the first thing that stood out was us. Is that the love factor that pulled Vincent through?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We were always a team. We were a team before he went to the hospital. We were a team in the hospital, and we were a team when he came home. So it's always we've always been a team. If I took it from if he need to lead, I would step aside. If I need to lead, he would step aside. So it was never a battle. It was never one against me or me against one. It was never like that. It was always us. And then it was with our son Justin. We always did things together, whether it was just Justin and Vince or Vince or Justin myself. We were always a team, and that's how I wanted people to know that, you know, we just didn't become us because I had to take care of Vince in the hospital. No, that was not it. We were us before that happened, and I wanted people to know that in very short and concise terms. And when I wrote the book, I always made sure that it was relayed that I had his back and he had my back, because when it came to rearing with Justin, even though he's in the hospital, he knew that he can discipline Justin or speak to him and correct him. We were always a team.
Yes, I remember speaking with you, and you said that it was so important for Justin to interact with his dad, to talk with his dad, to see his father, even though Vince probably he didn't look the same.
Right.
Yeah, you thought that it was so important. Yes.
Oh yes, as a father, just growing up seeing how my father was, and then growing up, and then Vince's grandfather was, and uncles. Vince had really strong male role models. I had really strong male roles in my life, but, you know, besides my dad. So I had a good foundation on how important it was for a son to be around his dad, or even a mentor. So when Vince went to the hospital, you know, like I said, when Vince went to the hospital before he became paralyzed. We made that decision, you know, to, you know, never project any sadness onto Justin. But when Vince couldn't talk, you know, I said, you know what, it's not going to change. It will not change. So when Vince went to the vent unit, even in the ICU, I pleaded with the ICU people to please just let our son see him for just a quick moment, just let him know that his father's still here. You know, Justin became, you know, started asking questions, and we decided to tell him, you know, accordingly, but always end on a positive note. And then when Vince went in the vent unit, the same thing. If Justin acted up, you know, Vince was more aware then. If Justin acted up in daycare, Justin had to tell his father. And even though Vince had no sound, he could move his mouth. And Justin actually read his lips. He read his lips. Children are very resilient. He read his lips. And Vince, you know, told him he needed to behave and be a good boy. And Justin said yes. And, of course, when you talk a little negative, you know, a little sad with the child, they'll, you know, get sad. And Justin, you know, Vince would have told Justin, stand on the side to get guardrails. And he would neck hug Justin. So, you know, that relationship still continued. There was never a pause or a break when it came to Vincent's fatherhood towards Justin. And that's one thing that I was vehemently determined to keep.
Yeah, we talked about you wearing different hats. For you to...
Yes.
That's a lot of hats to wear. I know... that's, to me, that's just unshakable faith. yeah. with what you did. And because you had it all mapped out. You had everything organized on the atmosphere of the room. And I want to ask, how old was Justin when this happened?
He turned 4 years old. He turned four years old that day. Vince fell on his birthday.
Mm.
Yeah, and the atmosphere with just keeping Vince's spirit happy, that's really what it just, that was my main concern. And then, you know, I always said to myself, when Vince and I were talking when he first came into the ER, you know, I told myself, you're going to leave how you came in, which is of healthy mind, body, and spirit.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I kept saying. I never wavered in thinking that, you know, of course there were rough times, but I never wavered from that. I never felt like the victim or he was a victim. I just, every time a problem arose, there was a solution to it. And if it made the problem worse, there was a solution to that. And that's to get rid of the irritant and bring something else in to make it work better.
Yes. If you're just joining us, you're listening to the Abundant Solutions Hour, and we have two very special guests, best-selling author Ty Thomas and her husband Vincent Thomas. And Ty, we have my lines are all lit up. There's a lot of people on here. For those that are listening, Ty, tell them where they can go to purchase your book.
Yes, it's called 7 Ways of Thinking, the number 7. 7waysofthinking.com, and it's very simple. It's on the landing page, the first page you see. You just pick either edition. It's a limited autograph edition with a hand signature, and there's only going to be 250 books sold. So get yours right away if you want an autograph edition, or you can for $24.99, or you can get just the regular softback edition, which is $19.99.
Awesome. And guests, for those that are listening, we will open the lines in a little bit. But Ty, I wanted to ask both of you, chapter 6 of the book.
Yes.
Death's door again. Death's door again. Yeah. What was that about?
Okay. My mother would stay with me for a week, and my mother-in-law would come for a week. So they were basically revolving doors supporting me. When my mother was leaving that day, my mother and my father. I'm sorry, my mother was with me. We walked in that, I was a little late. I walked up to Vince's bed, and I was stunned. The night before, he was thin, but I knew he wasn't sickly thin, if that makes any sense. His eyes weren't sunken, you know, he was fine. And I'm not saying that because it's my husband or a false hope, that's what it was. When I came in that morning, his eyes were sunk in, and he was laying flat, of course. And his gown was stretched. He looked like he was 9 months pregnant. I was stunned. My mother was stunned. And what happened was, something wasn't right. I called the nurse, and we found, and it's just she was very complacent. That's all the only thing I could say. When the doctor came in, I told her to call the doctor. I was very livid. When the doctor came in, I asked, you know, I told. If you read the book without me cursing, but I basically asked him what was going on, and the doctor in turn just told me, yes, your husband is dying. I was stunned. I couldn't believe he said that in front of Vince, and my mother was equally mad. She walked away, and I told him that they better do something quick or I'm pulling Vince out of the hospital. As soon as he gets better, I'm pulling him out because this should not have happened. I understand he was sick, but the level of care is what I was very upset about, and what happened – what wound up happening was that Vince had a perforated duodenal ulcer with a gallon of blood in his belly.
Mm.
So, and the next day I had a brand new doctor and a brand new nurse.
That's a lot for anyone to have to face and to deal with when doctor tells you
and
that.
He was on death's door. My mother-in-law wound up coming. And, of course, you know, she had to leave very quickly. But the surgeon told me that he was one step away from death. And he was on death's door. He had one foot in death's door. When I saw him, I was angry, and I need to fix this because I knew I was running against time. So my emotions weren't crying or weak I wasn't overwhelmed. I just need to fix this and get this fixed because I was not going to have my husband die in front of me. You know, it was a race against time. That's what my mind was. It was a race against time. So when I say that things, when problems arose, I had to find a solution. And if that irritant was that problem, I had to get rid of that irritant and get a better solution. It was that type of mentality.
In the book, you talk about daily rituals. Is that what you were talking about?
No, the daily rituals came when he was transferred to the venue a month and a half. This was in the ICU, the CICU, for the cardiac ICU, for a month and a half. And then the daily rituals came when he was in the vent unit, when Vince was now alert and aware. He was, I say he was himself now. He was aware. And the daily rituals, it was bathing him. Well, it was really moving his limbs and his fingers because I knew that even though Vince was having physical therapy and occupational therapy once a day, that was unrealistic. Nobody lives and stays still that long if they're able to move. And that's how I saw it. My husband doesn't lay down for 23 hours a day without moving. So I had to move his fingers, every joint from the shoulders down. And I'm talking about every joint, the fingers, every three joints in your finger or two joints in your fingers, every joint in his toes, every joint in his wrists, everywhere there was a joint, I moved. That was the daily rituals. And then he had hand splints. I would take the hand splints off because it was making him sweaty, and I came up with putting towels, hand towels, in the cup of his hand so he would have the natural form of how the hand hangs or how the hand is shaped, how the fingers are shaped. Because, like I said, my main thing was he was going to leave the hospital how he came in, physically, mentally, and spiritually. So I wanted him to leave with his fingers how that was naturally formed. His Achilles heel, I wanted to make sure it was straight. His feet, I took the boots off, and I put towels behind his feet to keep his feet straight up, as if he's laying in the bed and his feet are just looking straight up. So I put towels behind his feet. I changed them every day under his calf so he wouldn't get heel sores, and then moving him. And then Justin would have a note. Every morning he would give me a note to tell his father, and when I would get to the vent unit, I would put Justin's note on his trach dressing. I would write a note from his son, and I would read that note to his son. And then when Justin would come and visit, he would say, "Daddy, you got my note?" And so Vince would sincerely and honestly say, "Yes, I got it." So that was the daily ritual that I did every day. Was move, and by the time, I want to say 2 months out, I was very muscular in my arms, but Vincent's joints were very movable. I just did not want him to have any calcification whatsoever anywhere in his body.
I tell you what, Vincent, you have someone there. Whew, you have someone there. That's just true love. Ty and Vincent, I want to go to the lines right now. Area code 386-299, are you there? Do you have a question for Vincent or Ty? Area code 386-299. I guess not. Let's try another one. 917 area code. 917-319. Are you there? Yeah, I take it everybody's just listening right now. Vince, I want to go back to your son with the daily notes. You were looking forward to that. And I love the fact, Ty, that you gave him a goal. You gave him something to look forward to every single day. Every day was a little bit different, and you were giving him something to look forward to. That was so smart. And Vince, I look at you and Justin now. You know, he's off in college, and I just the relationship that you guys have as a family is just amazing. Did you save a lot of the notes? Did you save any of them at all?
No, I couldn't save them because, you know, I had to make sure I cleaned it every day on my trach. Mm-hmm. But just the communication that we have is, you know, that bond is so tight, you know, and it's been like that since I saw him born, you know, and it was just something about that, you know, that you know, we were still communicating even though he wasn't there every day. But like I said, when he would come in, you know, I have a picture, you know, of, you know, him on my bed, and, you know, he would give me a neck hug when he comes in, and, you know, we would sit and talk, even though I couldn't say, even though you couldn't hear any words coming from my mouth, but he would sit there and read my lips, and we would sit there and have full-on conversations, just like nothing ever happened.
Yeah. Vince, I'm going to go back to the lines. I'm going to try it one more time. Let's go to the lines of area code 804-334. Area code 804-334, are you there? I guess everybody's just listening in tonight. But Ty, I want to talk to you. I want you guys to talk about the service, the caregiving service that you and Vincent provide. I want you to talk about that a little bit.
Okay. The seven ways of thinking actually came before the book because of all the experiences that I've had. We just basically give tools to the caregiver. Okay, the caregiver and the patient, the spouse, or the significant other. And what we do is when somebody reaches out to us, mostly the caregiver, they're usually at their wit's end. Like they're having communication problems. They can't figure out why they cannot get along as far as communicating because they're arguing a lot. And what we'll do is either I'll come in or Vince will come in because he was the patient from that angle, and we'll sit down for the first consultation and just hear their story. And then we'll let them know, you know, we'll show them pictures of where we came from, just to kind of give a connection to let them know that, you know, we went through what you went through. And then we'll listen to them, and then we'll let them know what we think and the solutions that we can give them. And 9 out of 10, it's just the tools. It's just a third party coming in, and it's coming from somebody who's been in their position. And then it's you, and then we let them know. The second or third time we've actually started consulting with them, that is usually underlying issues that happen before the health event. And so we work through that, and it boils down just to communicate. You have to solve these issues that were pre-existing before the health event happened. And unfortunately, because they weren't solved, they manifested, and then something broke the camel's back, i.e. maybe the patient asking the caregiver, can you just give me that drink off the counter, and the caregiver say, well, that's your tone. I don't like your tone. And it wasn't necessarily that question, but it was something that just snapped. It triggered. And it just, and because it was never solved, it just kept manifesting and manifesting, and that's where we come in. We just give them the tools to have a better communication between the dynamics, between the relationships, so they can both get help. They can both get healthier and better, because it's vital that the patient is spiritually and mentally and physically happy, and the caregiver as well. And then we also let them know that these roles do change. They do change, and you don't even realize it. The caregiver now becomes the patient, and the patient now becomes the caregiver. So these roles are constantly changing and intermingling. And we just go in and let them know that. And then when they see that, they're like, oh, okay, so I need to start caring for myself as a caregiver and the patient if they can, whether they're quadriplegic or whatever ailment is hitting them, they can still take care of themselves. We just give them the tools to do it. And if it's just mentally self-reflecting or physically, whatever they're able to do, that's where we come in and we try to make their dynamic healthier.
Yes. Now, Vincent, when you're dealing with the men, what has been their perspective not being as the caregiver when their wife or their mother becomes ill? Have you dealt with issues from the men? What's their perspective?
From a man's perspective, a lot of times it's guilt, maybe of, you know, not being necessarily being able to take care of the spouses maybe as well as she did, you know, or you know, it's you know, men don't really communicate as much, so it's kind of hard to, you know, to kind
of, that's true,
you know, yeah, so you know, it's, you know, it's kind of hard kind of to you know, deal with certain things. But you know, from a man's perspective, you know, when you're taking care of your spouse, you know, you just be empathetic and, you know, you look at them from a standpoint of, you know, how, you know, I have to look at my wife as an example. So what she did for me, I just in turn, you know, do for her, and, you know, make sure that, you know, she taught me how to, you know, to care give. So,
yes.
You know, for me, it's, you know, it's easy, and I'm able to articulate that a lot with, you know, the men that I do, you know, happen to have at times. So.
Now, Ty, I've heard a lot of women say, I go into hospitals now from time to time, and I've seen women walk away from their husband, and I've seen them, the men placed in homes, I've seen it with men walking away from their wives. I mean, walking away, just not being able to do that, give them the care that they need. And I know a lot of people say, well, if they truly love them, do you think that it could be that they just don't know how to do it? They don't know how to be
of
a
course.
Caregiver because it's
of
such
course.
A this is a life changing event.
Of course, yeah. I think, like I said, I think it has three parameters. I think it's one, it's innate in you, or two, it starts in the home, or three, it's experience, through experience. One of the three, you know, will allow you to be a caregiver, but because if it's not innate in you, you have to learn through experience. But it also has a lot to do with the relationship that you're in with the person. If you don't communicate with your spouse or your significant other through any issues or problems, when a health crisis arises, it's going to make it worse. So now you're forced to really do some hard self-reflecting, and you have to deal with these pre-existing issues first. Even though if the health crisis is sudden, hopefully you'll be able to look at that person and remember why you liked that person in the first place, or why you fell in love with that person. And then when the time is right, you work through your issues. But I think it has a lot to do with either experience, how you were raised in your home, or even a mentor, or it's innate in you. It's one of those three things, and hopefully one of those will allow you to care for the person that you fell in love with in the beginning. Now, granted, there's a lot of issues that come across as your relationship arises, you know, if it's physical or mental abuse or something like that. But let's hope that's not the case, you know.
Yes, let's hope not. I want to try to go back to the lines. There's a 347 area code. I have a ton of those. 347-605. 347-605. Yes, are you there? You're live on the Abundant Solutions Hour. Welcome.
How you doing? This is Dr. Ford. How you doing?
How you doing, Dr. Ford? You're live with Vincent and Ty.
Forgive my baby in the background. First, I wanted to say congratulations. But my question is, I wanted to know if y'all could address a little bit about the aftermath when Vince came home from the hospital. Was there a readjustment period? Was there a reestablishment of roles? How did that transition go for y'all?
Oh, okay. I'm going to try to be as brief as possible because that actually leads into the next volume series. But when Vince came home, everything changed. I was finally able to breathe, and he was literally taking more of an active role. We made adjustments to allow him to, because he was coming out of his paralysis, even when he was being discharged, I knew he was coming out of his paralysis just due to the symptoms that he was having. But he was becoming, Vince always was independent, and so we made different adjustments for him to be independent and get back to what he wanted to do, and that was to be efficient and take care of his family. And that's, we went back to being normal again. However, I can tell you that personally with me, feelings started to manifest that I didn't know I had, and it was a little bit difficult for me just because of the long hospital stay that I kept kind of dormant or bottled up because I wasn't expressing it all the time during the hospital stay, but when he did come home, negative feelings started to manifest.
Yes. Doctor, do you have any other questions for Ty or Vincent?
Well, did that also manifest itself in a relationship with Justin?
No. No, we always, 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 always never projected any sadness or any negativity on him. Never. That never happened. It was something that we, it was like that before he went to the hospital, and we were determined that when Justin was in daycare, we would iron all those issues out. And because of our relationship together, Vince and I, we always ended on a positive note. It wasn't false. It wasn't a, it wasn't false hope. We just got to a point where we talked it out, we communicated, and we wound up happy, hugging, and like, and we were good. So by the time Justin came home, it wasn't false. It was just natural. We were ironed all of our issues out. So Justin never saw any of that.
Awesome. I want to go to the lines 386-299. Are you there? 386-299. Let me try another number. Let's go with the 347-284. 347-284. You have a question for Vincent or Ty?
Hello?
Yes. How are you, sir? Go ahead. You're live.
How you doing, man? I just want to say that the book is very inspirational and educational. I learned a lot about that, the disease, and I really didn't know. And it's scary because I have a family of my own, and I think about it from a respiratory infection, you know?
Yes, yes. Do you have a question?
No,
go ahead.
I'm sorry. As a wife and as a husband, because in the husband's standpoint, I believe I would be afraid. And to both, I just want to say I love them, and they're both strong, and I appreciate them for the I thank you for, you know, allowing me to, you know, answer my call too.
Thank you so much. Vincent and Ty,
right,
were you able
to? Yeah, that was my cousin. That was my cousin Terrell. Love him to death. He's married with his wife Jess, and they were one of the very first. They were the very first one of the very first family members to get the book. So he, that's what he. Yeah, I heard him, even though he's breaking up. So Terrell, Jess,
yeah.
I love you guys so much.
And you know, Ty, the book. Yeah, go ahead, Vincent. I'm sorry.
I was saying we. I was just reiterating what my wife said. You know, we loved them.
Yes. The book is inspirational. And Ty, again, for those that just joined us, the book is An Interruption in Time, A Chronicle of Life and Death, and this is the first volume. Ty, again, would you give that information out on where they can purchase the book?
Sure. It's sevenwaysofthinking.com, the number seven. Just go on to the website. It's the landing page, and choose whichever edition you like. The autographed edition is a handwritten signature with a number out of 250, limited. And then there's another edition that's just the soft cover without the autograph. The autographed one is $24.99, and the regular soft edition, soft cover edition is $19.99. At sevenwaysofthinking.com, the number seven.
Okay. I want to go back to the lines. The 347-818, are you there, caller?
Yes, I am.
Yes, go ahead. You're live. You have a question for Vincent or Ty?
I actually don't have a question, but that's my cousin, Tyessa, and my cousin, Vin. Just want them to know I'm very proud of them, and I love them.
Yes.
Oh,
well,
I
caller, let
too.
Me... well, caller, caller, I know you, since Ty is your cousin, what do you say about her strength in going through this ordeal?
Oh, listen, she's a very strong person, and she always has been.
Yes.
She went through
a
lot, and I'm very proud of her.
Good. See, I tell you what, she's an example of what a wife, she's just a good example of a wife. That's all.
Absolutely.
That's all I can say. Yes. Thank you so much for calling and listening. Yes.
Okay.
Thank you so much. Ty.
Yes.
You hear that word all the time. You're strong, and I'm sure people were telling you that when Vincent was in the hospital and when he came home.
Yes.
I know at some point you were sick and tired of hearing it.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, because you were pouring so much out into him. Did you have anyone pouring into you?
Yes, my parents. My parents. My cousin, Ashley Terrell, my cousin Rob. I had some very close friends. My friend Waverly. I had some very close people who were always making sure that I was okay. So I did have that. I did have some break times when Vince did come home. I had a friend, Robin, who was actually his nurse, who's in the book. We would go out so I can take a break. But I can tell you, only later on in life, years later, was when it kind of came crashing down. But during that time, I did have a lot of support, you know, asking me, make sure I was okay.
Yes. Now, Todd, you also offer other services, and I think you have another book. I think it's about the writing process.
Oh, yes. Before I go beyond that, my cousin Terrence also was very supportive, and that's in the next book that I really won't get into, but that was another person who really helped out as well when Vince came home. Going through the book writing process, even though I had experts, family, friends who were experts in writing and just the different aspects of writing the book, you know, a lot of different advice and opinion, it was very frustrating. I've never written a book before. I never went through the process. And no matter how much you YouTube or get advice, it becomes extremely frustrating. Information overload was my main thing. So what I decided to do is I decided to write a 23-step book writing process, not the marketing, but the book writing process. And because if I was having frustrations and I thought I was a very intelligent person, I knew that I felt like I was the dumbest person in the world, and it was not. That's an understatement. So I knew that there were millions of other people, and as I was writing it, I was running into people asking me, "How'd you do this? How'd you do this?" So that's what I said. You know what? My husband actually thought of that. He said we should write a 23-step process, and I was like, "Oh, maybe." You know, I don't give myself all that credit of being entrepreneurial. My husband does that. And then he was pushing me, and then I said, okay. So I sat and I wrote it, but it came from my frustrations of having so much information overload. I wanted to condense that for the layman person, the beginner, who wants to do it, but it's just too much out there. And that's what I wound up doing. It's just 23 steps. It's a bullet point style digital download, and it's very easy to follow. You're going to have the editors or whoever, you know, helping you out, but you at least will have a starting point, a base of what to do or what to expect. And that's where that came from, my frustrations of not knowing what to do and just helping the next person, you know, just to give them a starting point because I didn't have that.
Yes. And, you know, sometimes, Todd, too, you have to grow your wings on the way down, and you jumped, and thank God you grew the wings. How important was it for you to write your book? How important was it?
It was very important because my mom, when Vince was in the vent unit in February 2000, she's the one who suggested I write it. Because my mother was a very prolific, erudite type woman. She was very literal. She loved to write. She loved to write, loved to write, loved to write. So she was very into that. And 16 years later, well, almost 17 years later, my mother passed in 2001. So when she passed suddenly, the book writing process, the book just, I just forgot about it. I didn't even think about it. Only when we moved back and last year was when Vince was saying, you should write it. And kind of I was like, yeah, I guess I'm okay now. You know, our son is in school. And my mother kept speaking to me and speaking to me and speaking to me spiritually. So in April, that's when I started thinking about it and Vince kept saying, you know, you should write it. And that's why it was really important. It really is because of my mom, honestly. It was very important that I fulfilled her, you know, her suggestion, I guess. I wouldn't even call it suggestion, but just her words to me, because I respect and love them, love my mother and father so much that even though they're gone, I still respect them, and that's why I wrote the book.
Yeah.
The book is dedicated to my son because he was so young, and dedicated to my husband, but the book is for my mom. it's for my mom because she was a very giving and helpful person. And then as I was writing it, the book became, you know what, if somebody else can read this book and have and know that they're not alone and they're in the hospital taking care of somebody or they're at home, that it would help them, you know, give some sort of guidance or even support. That's all I can, you know, just to help that one person, give them inspiration.
You know, it's a lot of us out there. We have life experiences that can help others. But we can't be ashamed of the experiences that knocked at our doors. There's a lot of people out there that you have a book in you, to those that are listening. You have an experience that you can share with the world. And don't ever feel like your experience is not good enough. Trust me, it's a lot of people that went through something that you are familiar. Mm. They went through something similar to what you're going through or what you did go through. And now that you're out of it, don't keep the world at bay. Go ahead and write it. Write your book.
Yeah.
And you may not know what to do, but just get started like Ty did.
Yeah.
Just get started and it'll come to you. And if you need to, Ty, if they need to reach out to you, how can they get in contact with you just for advice, just for some type of inspiration, if anything?
Yep, they can go to the 7waysofthinking.com, and they can email me through there. I answer emails a lot faster and just move forward from there. They can just contact me through there, 7waysofthinking, the number 7waysofthinking.com. And I must say, Greg, that with the consulting that I do, because Vince is a certified plant-based nutritionist, people don't realize that the caregivers or the patients, they need to eat healthy as well as healing their mind, the mental and physical and spiritual strength. They need to eat as well. And that's why Vince is a co-consultant, because he's certified in plant-based nutritionist, because he's certified in knowing how to eat the right foods, so the caregiver's not always tired, or even the patient's not always tired, they can change their eating habits. So it all comes full circle, so to speak. You have to, one cannot survive without the other, meaning you can't have a spiritual healthy life if you're eating bad, because then even though you're spiritually happy, your body is full and weighted down. So your body's not happy and light. So they all both feed off on each other. So I want to mention that as well. The health part, the eating part, the nutrition part is extremely paramount when it comes to the consulting part.
And with the consulting part of the business that you have, do you offer any type of seminars or workshops or presentations?
Yes, we do. We have the patient spouse caregiver lecture series. We also have the plant-based nutrition lecture series. And when I say the plant-based nutrition, it's not just strictly plant-based, but it's just starting from the basis, but we do have that lecture series as well as the physical fitness series, so it all ties in. We do have seminars and lecture series.
Awesome. We have about less than 2 minutes left into the show, and I tell you, I'm sitting here, I'm taking notes, and I'm sure everybody else has gained a lot of knowledge from tonight's show. And Ty, I'm pretty sure you've learned some stuff about yourself that you didn't know. We talked last night, and I kind of mentioned that to you. I kind of mentioned that to you, and we talked about that a little bit. Again, Ty, give out your information, your contact information on how people can contact you if they want to, let's say, speaking engagements or anything that they may just want to reach out to you and Vincent.
Okay, it's the number 7waysofthinking.com. And you can just email or you can set up a calendar appointment and just move forward from there.
Okay, good. If you would, for 30 seconds or less, Ty, is there anything else that you want the listeners to know about you and Vincent?
We're just like any regular old couple. and we just keep striving to communicate and keep communicating and enhancing our relationship better, because communication is the key. And never go to bed angry.
Exactly.
Never go to bed angry.
Exactly.
And do not let the children see it if you can. That's very key. And solve any problems before you go to bed, because you will not get a good night's sleep.
You'd be surprised how a conversation can make a big difference in the world between a relationship, because, you know, you get to better understand each other's perspective. And if I understand that my wife, you know, she has a certain way she views something, and she has a certain way that I view something, I can make sure that I don't agitate that and make sure I'm very much aware of that so I don't, you know, cause conflict. And I think once you do that, you start to have a lot more respect, and the love grows and the bond between you guys grow. And that expands to the family. So if you have a good, healthy marriage and, you know, the man is happy, the woman is happy, the kids will be happy.
Yes, awesome, awesome.
Having a good bond, yeah. So.
Yes. Thank you guys so much for joining us. You were listening to the Abundant Solution Hour, and I tell you what, I just loved it. And if you can, please purchase the book, An Interruption in Time, A Chronicle of Life and Death. And this is Volume 1. Volume 2 is coming as well. And Vincent and Ty, thank you so much for breaking bread
thank
with
you.
Us
thank
this
you.
Evening, because I know you could have been doing something else. But I thank you so much
thank
for sharing
so much.
This special, special, special show. Thank you. Good night.
Thank you. But good night.
Good night.